Accession number 23350, Malcolm Barker, reels 1 and 2 of ultimately 4. Left channel informants mic only, right channel interviewers mic.
Malcolm Barker, reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Barker?
I was born on the 18th of July 1932 at Kempston, which is near Bedford.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background?
I was a twin. I've got a twin sister, Gillian, and I was born in a public house called the Shoulder of Mutton, Green End, Kempston. And my first, only sort of memory as a small child was going around on a tricycle with my twin sister. And then I went to school, the local...
Yeah, can I ask a bit about your family? Your dad was a publican, was he?
Oh, yeah. My father was a publican, and his occupation was a leather tanner. He worked at a local leather works, never had a day off in his life, never had a holiday. Only day he had off a year was Epsom Races on August Monday.
Your mum, did she work or just
my mum? No, my mum didn't work because she was doing the pub during the lunch hours. Though it was only a village pub. Then when I was 5, I went to the local Church of England school, which was about a mile down the road, till I was 11.
Now, how did you do at school? I mean, you know.
I was pretty near. I was always in the A class. This is at the primary school. I was just going to mention that it would have been about, I don't know, 1941, something like that. One day me and my twin sister were walking to school and a German bomber came over and dropped some bombs at Bedford and we jumped in the ditch. That is my first sort of feeling of the war.
I was going to ask you about the declaration of war. How did the war affect you generally, do you think?
Well, during the war itself, we had two evacuees from Walthamstow. There was 9 of us in the house, to the 2 grandfathers, 2 evacuees, 3 children, and mum and dad. There was there.
How did you get on with the evacuees? Can you tell us how because you were
No real problem really. One of them was sort of sub-educational standard, but they went to a separate school and just down the road. Believe it or not, one of the evacuees was Dave Sexton, who was the coach to the England football team. His father was Artie Sexton, the boxer, well-known boxer in London before the war. I did have a couple of fights with him as kids, like you do.
Were the evacuees treated the same way as you were in your house?
Yeah, exactly the same. There was no problem. They were just one of us.
And you, what, you know, it's like, you know, when you get a new brother, was there any jealousy between you?
No, there was no ill feeling, no. No, because bear in mind that we were living in a pub, and it's not like an ordinary home, a pub. We were meeting people even as children. I'll expand on that a little bit later. And then...
How long did the evacuees stay with you?
I don't really know. About 2 or 3 years, something like that. One particular night I do remember during the war was when they bombed Coventry. My dad took me to the front door and we could see all these German aeroplanes going over. Not very high, it was. And then another night I saw one doodle bug and that saw that crash. And when we used to play football in a field, we used to watch the Flying Fortresses go over from Thurloy, which is where, what's that band leader? Glenn Miller flew from, yeah. And then we used to watch the Flying Fortresses and the Lancasters all used to go over. And I particularly remember seeing a Spitfire once, and we couldn't believe that it was doing 360 miles an hour. You know, because we were only children. Because my father, one of my uncles worked on the R101 and on the Mosquito and the Comet. So I was always a little bit interested in aeroplanes. Then
well,
I...
Hang on, what about other effects of the war? Well, rationing, I'm thinking of.
Well, pardon?
Rationing.
Oh, yeah, I'll just mention another thing. My mum used to play the piano, and my dad used to sing, and the pub used to be full of soldiers nearly every night. And I remember just before the invasion, there was two soldiers with a Bren gun carrier. We had a ride in this Bren gun carrier, and I particularly remember him, when I asked him how far it was from A to B, he mentioned that it's not only a straight line, you've got to count the zigzags. I particularly remember him saying that to me as a child. Why I mention it is because later on I was actually taught to drive Bren gun carrier, so I thought I'd mention that, because I've got one or two coincidences like that.
How did you get on with the soldiers?
Well, all right. I mean, we were only small children, we didn't. The fields were full of Canadians. In where we were, there's open fields in front. They're all Canadians there, but it was just for all soldiers. And I remember there was a big bakery. One of the farms was a big bakery, because Kempston Barracks, which the Beds and Arts training, they used to march. Do rape marches by my mum dad's pub, and they used to go in there for a drink on these marches. Because my mum made a particular friend of chap from Wales, Mr. Hill, made a friend for years, through that.
Was there any trouble with any of it, a pub?
No, never had any hassle at all. No, I only remember one fight between two locals, and that was because one son pushed another son in the river, but that's the only thing I remember. I could mention a couple of things. One of the funny things was, there was a chap called Amos. He weren't an old soldier. There was one old World War I veteran. This chap was called Amos, and my brother-in-law used to call him Amosquito, which was what I thought was quite funny. And that was about it, really.
Now, what about rationing, food and clothing?
Well, I didn't. Clothes. My mum could make clothes anyway. She was a seamstress. Well, that was a bit later on, I mentioned. She built us a tent. That will come into play. I don't really remember much about clothes. I know we always had it enough, but my mum could make them anyway. She wanted. The only thing I remember about rationing is at one time we had sort of 6-7 tins of sugar, so we each had our own tin of sugar. But that went bust, because not long after it started, Mum went down early and caught Dad taking somebody else's sugar. So that was rationing for you. And then we had pigs at the bottom of the garden, pigs and hens, which a lot of people did have. I particularly remember my mum at Christmas doing the old chitlins. They don't allow them to do that now, do they? Chitlins don't allow them to sell pigs chitlins anymore. You know what I'm talking about? I'll tell you what we lived on. We had three big Bramley apple trees, and we had no end of Bramley apple trees. We lived on Bramley apples. But we didn't go short. I could tell you about the pub. The pub used to run out of beer every so often, and the locals would come round the back. That was another little dodge. That was to do with the shortage. They used to run out of beer. What else? Well, that not... When I was 12, I was thinking of 1932, I'm talking about 1944, yeah, that was it, that's still the war. I started doing Fridays and Saturdays as a butcher's boy.
Well, tell me about that work. What was that like, working as a butcher's boy?
Well, I was just sitting in a van delivering meat for this butcher. But I always remember taking some old lady, her ration of meat, and it was so small I couldn't believe it. It was hardly any bigger than a saucer. She says, "Is that all I've got?" I said, "Well, that's all he's given me." And that's all she had, because she was on her own. But a lot of, because there was a lot of rabbits about then. That was a well-known thing, rabbiting.
So you were just, you were just a delivery boy?
Yes, a delivery boy, yeah.
You didn't drive the van then?
Oh, no, I was only 12. Yeah, so really I started work at 12.
And what about your other school when you were older?
What amazed me was I was nearly top, if not top, at the primary school, and failed 11 plus. I remember going in this room and I was frightened to death. I was all on my own, so I failed 11 plus. Then I went to the secondary school.
Which one was that? Do you remember its name?
It was Kempston. That was, I don't know what it was called. It was on top of the hill opposite Sainsbury's. Well, I don't know the name of it.
And what was it like there? How'd you do there?
Well, I was top there. I was way up there. Now, I will tell you this. There's one thing I was very, very, very good at. All I used to do when I was about 12, 13, 14, we did no homework at all. Take dart schools in my dad's pub. And I could beat the teachers by standing up in the class and doing mental arithmetic, even though I was only 12, 13. Because all I ever did was that 9, 8, 72, 7, 8, 56, whatever. I can 7, 8 and 8 is 23. See, I can do it just like that. Because that's all I ever did. That night after night, I was good at mental arithmetic. Nothing else I was no good at.
What about sport, things like
that?
Oh,
yeah, I was captain at football and cricket. I was all right at sport because we used to play... Well, when I was about 14, there was a chap we used to play cricket with, and he worked... This would be interesting to you. He worked at Allen's Works at Bedford on nights, and they used to do diesel engines for ships. Huge works, diesel engines, W.H. Allen's and Sons. Because my sister went to work there eventually. It's all houses now. So then that was till I was 14. Well, then it was 1946.
Now, hang on. What about V-Day or VJ Day? Do you remember any special celebrations?
No, I can't remember anything about them.
Okay. Right.
I just can't remember.
Now, when you left school, you'd leave at 14?
I left at 14, yeah.
Now, what were you going to do when you left school?
I ain't got a clue. And my eldest sister saw this advert for plumbing apprentice, so I went plumbing at Bedford. H.T. Ball and Son. It was near Bedford School.
What was the work like there? What was it like being a plumbing apprentice?
It was all right. I just used to go to different places. And my actual plumber was an Arnhem veteran. He used to wear his red beret. Yeah, which was nice, you know. And I never dreamt that I'd ever go to war. And I was there till I was 18. And I didn't finish my apprenticeship.
And what kind of work were you doing?
Just ordinary household plumbing, putting heating systems in, drains, anything, windows, just done anything. But
did you enjoy it?
Not really, no. I didn't.
Why not?
What I should have said is when I was about 12, going to school one day on the school bus, I saw a policeman at a telephone kiosk. And I made up my mind there and then that I would be a policeman. And in the pub, that funny enough, that chap who always said it was Amos, he asked me what I was going to do. I said, I'm going to be a policeman. And he said, it's a good job because you'll never be out of work. I remember him saying that. So my ambition, right from sort of an early age, was to be a policeman. No, I didn't want nothing else. So I thought my temperament suited it and I was big enough.
Now, so you were a plumbing apprentice till you were called up, were you?
Yeah, till I was 18.
Now, yeah. Tell me about the call-up. How did it work for you?
I just got notice through the post that I'd got to go to St Albans.
And do you know when that was?
For a medical. Well, it was July. I joined up in September. It was sometime, might have been July, August, I don't know.
1950,
yeah. Yeah.
And what happened when you went for the medical?
Well, all I remember is... Going down to St Albans on the train from Bedford, and then we got to these prefabricated buildings, and then they sort of asked us a few questions. I think we had to do an exam as well, and then strip off, and they examined us, and that was it.
Now, did they ask you what you wanted to join Royal Navy, RAF, infantry?
No, I had I always thought afterwards that because I hadn't had the proper education, that's probably why I didn't go in the RAF. Whether that was so, I don't know, but putting two and two together, I think it's probably that was why. But anyway...
How did you feel about being called up? I mean, there was no war liable at the time, I don't think, but how did you feel about it?
The Korean War was on.
It already started,
The Korean War started in June 1950.
How did you feel about being called up?
Well, I didn't mind, because I've been brought up in an age where people had done all their service. Well, incidentally, none of my family, my father only had one aunt, so he didn't do army service. None of my immediately family had done any military service, apart from one uncle, and he was a driver in London, so he hadn't sort of seen action. So I was the first one of the family. And come to that, I'm still the only one of the family who's done active service.
Now, where were you called in September? Where did you have to go?
I went to Colchester. The Army Barracks, Colchester.
And which regiment? Were you joining?
Well, I'll just tell you about the journey there. I got on the train, swapped over and come up the train to Colchester. And what I particularly remember, when we pulled into the Colchester railway station, there was a big open car park and all these three tonners were at the far side of the car park. And I always remember, before we even got off the train, we was in civilian clothes, before we even got off the train, "Get out of the train, get in lines of threes." We couldn't believe it. They were going at us before we even got off the train. And then we had to get in lines of three, and then they took us up to Miani Barracks.
And who were you joining there?
Well, there was no regiment involved then. It was just what they called basic training.
But do you know whether it was a...
It was the Essex Regiment. I think it was the Essex Regiment who was running the training, because it was Colchester. I don't know for sure, mind you, about that. I know we had a Sergeant Roach was their sergeant, I know.
Now, if we start with the accommodation, what were the barracks like?
That was a big building with about 30 beds, and then there was a second floor with another 30 beds. I understand it's still there.
And what were the rooms like?
Well, there was 30 of us. It was just the walls and a toilet at the end with only cold water. Basically, that was it. It was very bare, and you had a tin cupboard by your bed. And that was your cupboard, and it was just very basic.
Any heating, although it's September, so...
Oh, yeah, they had heating in the winter, yeah, had a bit of, well, it must have done it. I think it had them fires where you had a chimney go up, a little round fires, what are they called?
Stoves.
Yeah.
Now, if we look at your training by means of a typical day, and I know there's no such thing as a typical day, it sort of picks in a lot of things. What time would your day start? And
We were up at 6:30, so I remember that. And I can't remember, we would go to breakfast and we'd be on the playground, say, at 9:00, or maybe up the state. I don't really know. I can't really remember.
Well, if we start with breakfast, what was the food like?
Well, it was bacon and egg, just basic bacon and egg, I think. Just normal breakfast, fried breakfast.
And
I can't really remember.
What about the food generally in a day? How was it for you?
Well, I can't really remember what the food was like.
It wasn't important. It was all right, though.
It was all right. It was edible. That was the main thing.
Was there enough of it?
Oh, there was enough, and I always remember an officer come round if there was any complaints. But you didn't complain, for the obvious reason, you know, you just... And there was a naffy, where we used to go and have a drink in the evening.
So after the morning, what about...
I can't remember. I know we used to do... I can remember weapon training.
Tell me about that, then.
Well, we had a machine gun or whatever it was, and you start to take it to pieces and put it together again.
That the Bren gun?
Bren gun, yeah. Because eventually I had a Sten gun, but there's a reason for that.
But you didn't... Did you train on the Sten?
No, a rifle.
How did you get on with the rifle?
Well, we went, all right, I was quite a good shot, but the only thing was, you might think this is funny, you know, I could only shut my right eye. And I couldn't shut my left eye, so I had to put an eye shield on my eye before I could fire a rifle. That is the reason I changed to a Sten gun. If I could jump the gun a bit, on the way to career on
So, weapons training. Any other weapons? Hand grenades?
Yeah, I remember throwing the hand grenades, and I was in light battle order, some idiot pushed me in this river. And I nearly drowned. I got out and I was wet and I stayed wet all bloody day. I remember that. Yeah, somebody pushed me in this bloody river, the idiot. I don't know why the army didn't charge him, because it was stupid.
Any other weapons?
But there was no... Them days, there was no... I don't know if it's today, but there was no suggestion of health and safety. That just didn't come into it. I mean, that idiot could have drowned me as easy as that. No, and I weren't a strong swimmer.
No, any other weapons you were introduced to then?
No, I only had hand grenades.
Bayonet?
Oh, the bayonet training we did, obviously.
How's about that?
Stabbing the old sandbag. Yeah, we did that. And we did... I particularly remember being in the woods and we had to jump these trenches where they were firing live ammunition in the trench. Like, I remember jumping over that and when we done field training.
Tell me a bit more about the field training.
Yeah, I'll tell you another funny story that's come to mind. We went out once on a map reading course, that was it. And we got they took us out in three tonners, dropped us off in the middle of nowhere. And we got to find this particular pub for dinner. And anyway, it got to about 12 o'clock. There was three or four of us. And we met some of our mates coming down this lane the opposite way. And it didn't occur to us to use the sun, not at that time. And there was a big argument, who was right and who was wrong. And we went our way and they went their way. Well, of course, we were wrong. By the time we got to the pub, about 2-3 o'clock, the dinner had gone. And I particularly remember that. They teach you the hard way, the army. They do.
Any other outdoor
exercise? Because I use the sun as a sort of direction pointer, and that taught me about that. They have good ways of teaching in the army, do. I never went on any assault courses because I was in the boxing team. I got out of that.
Tell us about the boxing then.
Well, we didn't have a fight. We had a team, but we never had a fight.
Were you training?
No, I don't think so. We didn't do a lot of boxing training. I just skived out of the assault courses, to be honest with you. But that I did box later on.
Had you been a boxer before?
No. Oh, I'd done boxing when I was about 15. The sportsmaster from Bedford School took boxing classes in the local village hall. So I knew a little bit about boxing. So that's why I volunteered. But I boxed on the boat, but we'll come to that later. But,
any other training you'd have during a typical day?
Well, there was obviously the marching.
How did you take... How did you take to drill?
Oh, I didn't mind drill because... Oh, that was the thing I forgot. When I was about 14, I was in the church lads' army. And I'd had a little bit of drill, so I was a little bit used to it. That's a point. And when I got to Colchester originally... They showed us how to fold our blankets, and it was exactly the same as I'd done in the church army.
Sticking to drill, to jump about. The drill, what did you understand why you had to do so much of it at the time?
Oh, yeah. I understood why the drill was. It was because you got to obey an order. So that if you was in the line, you'd got to obey an order. I understood all that. And that's basically the reason, not only that you do things together, but that you obey the order. Because if you're told to do something as a soldier, particularly in the line, you've got to do it. You ain't got to argue about it. You've got to do it.
Now, what about kitting out and preparing for kit inspection? Firstly, when you were kitted out, what did they issue you with?
Well, I can't remember. Obviously, the normal army battle dress and the trousers, and just a normal and a belt, a blanco. In that was it. We had a lot of blanco belts and the. Gaiters were got to be blanco. We had the gaiters and the old boots, which we had to pull with spoons. Oh, that was another speciality of mine.
So tell me about how you balled your boots up then.
Well, you warmed a spoon up on the stove and melted the top of your toe of your boots, and then it was the old spit and polish job. And I used to love doing my boots and still do today because it was something to do during the time. We hadn't got a lot of money. We only had about 19 shillings a week.
Now, so you do the boots. What else would you have to do to prepare for kit inspection or inspection?
Well, obviously you've got to shave, but you had to shave, and the washing and shaving was all in cold water, which of course was foreign to us. And that was a bit hard at first, but you got used to it.
What about blankoing?
Oh yeah, no problems blankoing.
Can you explain what it was? Because people don't know now.
Well, there was you had a tin, like a shoe polish tin. And it had this stuff in it called Blanco. And you would the belt was made of webbing. And then you would wet the rag, or I think it was a piece of rag. And then you'd put it in the tin and get the Blanco on the wet rag. And then put it on the belt. And it would be wet You wouldn't be wearing it, obviously. It'd be wet, and then you would hang it up to dry. And that was blankoing. But the one thing you've got to make sure you didn't do, that you didn't cover your brass buckles and your buttons, because they would notice it. You know, they were red hot, like, for things like that.
Well, were you still using a button stick and things like that to polish your buttons and brasso or whatever it was?
What, then? Oh, yeah, that was, I mean, don't forget, this is only, what, 5 years after the war. I mean, we was way out of date compared with the Americans.
Now, what about laying your kit out? You mentioned you had to set it to a pattern. Oh, what do you remember of that?
Oh, well, at the top was the blanket. So it was three blankets folded with a round bit at the front and a blanket round the three. And he said, that's how I want it done. But mine, because I'd done it at Church Stadsbygate, so obviously I knew how to do it. Then, of course, you had to lay out all your equipment, like your comb, your cooking utensils, your boot polish, and all. Everything had to be laid on the bed so that they knew that you'd got it all. Yeah, the only time I got jankers once was kit inspection, was for dirty comb. And I kept this back on Saturday afternoon. Normally we went home Saturday lunchtime, but if you were on jankers, you had to stay Saturday afternoon and do a parade, do a drill.
What would you do in the evening? I suppose a lot of the time in the evening, look, you'd be doing that, preparing for
the next day. Yeah, or in the naffy. It's very rare I went down into Colchester.
Now, what was a naffy like? What did it offer you?
Well, it was beer, obviously, and cigarettes. It was pretty basic.
Did you drink and smoke at the time?
I didn't smoke then. Sure, that's another thing. That comes later. No, I didn't smoke then, but I did drink. I was brown and mild, man. Yeah, and that's another bit that'll come later as well.
What was it like in the naffy? I mean, well, was there any games? I mean, snooker or
billiards? There wasn't any games. And being brought up in a pub, I was good at dominoes and crib and all the card games. Still am, incidentally. But of course, none of the lads played them. I was sort of near all the games that the older people played, because I was brought up in a pub. But it was pretty boring, to be quite honest. After living in a pub, it was damn boring, I'll be honest with you.
What about going into Colchester? Did you ever do that? You said
I only went into Colchester once or twice, very rare.
And what would you do? What was a visit to
Colchester? Well, I went to pictures once, I think. And I went to the big naffy building. It was a big naffy building, and I just hated it. It was a big.
Why?
Well, it was a big concrete building, and I didn't know anybody, and it was just too big, you know what I mean? And I just didn't like it. Just didn't like it. I found it difficult, to be honest, having been brought up in a pub and having company all night, every night. I found it very difficult when I was sort of more or less on my own.
How did you get on with the other recruits?
No problems. I have one good friend.
Who was that?
Stannard, his name was. He come from Arpenden. Stannard. I forget his first name. Now, he was a good friend. I've never seen him since the war, since we were there, but... And I only knew Ginger because he volunteered to go...
Ginger Nutty, you mean?
Yeah, because he volunteered to go to the parachuting. But I remember one particular soldier, that was it, laid on his bed in the corner. He come from London, a little bloke. He laid there about 3 days. He had no meals, nothing. He just said that he was not going to do his national service. And eventually they just took him away to Colchester... Army prison at Colchester. I had to take a prisoner there once while I was there. Yeah, that was while I was at Colchester. Escort. As soon as I got in the gate, I had a double with a prisoner. I remember that. That was at Colchester prison.
Now, what about the NCOs, your instructors? Yeah. What were they like? How did you get on
very,
with them?
Very, very nice, yeah. Well, it was the old story. Some were nice, others pretended to be hard. It was like a police interview. It was a typical thing.
Now, what?
The sergeant was a real nice bloke. His name was Sergeant Roach, and we used to call him Kipper. That was his nickname. I forget the names of the other corporals.
And what made him a good sort of...
Because he was like a father to us. He knew we were National Service, and he treated us like a son. He really did. But one of the corporals was a bit hard.
In what way?
Well, the way he spoke to us, you know, wasn't very. We couldn't approach him, you know. But I think that's done deliberate, because you do that deliberately with a prisoner when you've got a priest prisoner. Quite frankly, you realise that later on.
But you didn't realise at the time.
Oh no, not at the time, because you don't understand human nature, do you?